Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, January 24th, 2017. And this says, before the first cup of jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a, kind of springy 33 degrees with wet, chunky snow today here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Trump, IBM, AI, quote, trusted advisors, and willingly selling ourselves. We took a look at this complex relationship between government, technology, medicine, 21st century cures, mad science gone mad. I don't know. We've also stitched in the military-industrial complex and this quest for the fountain of youth. The rich tech billionaires are all out to defy death. They have partnered with a lot of the government agencies, all in the name of keeping you safe, being able to make sure that we don't have terrorists running around, those pesky internet terrorists everywhere. They've clamped down. The back doors are open. We stepped out of 2016 knowing that the surveillance that was out there was beyond anything we had ever imagined originally. I mean, after the Snowden leaks and a lot of the other information that we have read about over the last few years, it is very obvious that any of us that were tinfoil hat wearing techies at one point in the past 20 or some odd years ago actually had a clue, because all that stuff was going on. But now we find out with the 21st Century Cures Act that was passed right at the end of December of 2016 that they have a whole section in there for neurological surveillance for mental illness. Now, you know, most people have been parading around saying what a great thing this is. They passed a huge chunk of change in that bill for much needed mental health treatment. And I agree. I mean, I actually have friends who had relatives who really needed some help, and it was very difficult to get help. Very, very tragic circumstances. And if you go through the history of mental health treatments, they could be some of the most horrifying photographs you've ever seen. Some of the things that used to happen to people who were deemed mentally defective. You know, up here in upstate New York, there's quite a few former quote-unquote lunatic asylums. Big sprawling buildings out somewhere in the hills with nothing much around, just lots of acres and lots of trees. But you find out time and time again that in these places back in the 1800s, early 1900s, there were all kinds of horrifying experiments going on. People would get committed, and then you had no rights. You were just sucked into the machine. And, you know, anything in the name of curing you or making you better, which included things such as electrodes to the brain or frontal lobotomies, where they actually crack open your skull, hack out portions of your gray matter. And in a lot of those places, especially if they have historical tours, they're always going to tell you how, yes, there were thousands that were buried in unmarked graves out back somewhere after unfortunate deaths. And you know, what a frightening time in history, because I'll tell you, let's rewind just even a simple 5 years ago, maybe six. And if you would have approached me about mental illness back then, I had a much, much different perspective than I do now. You know, a lot of our research has evolved from the very beginnings of looking at, you know, it really kind of started with the Fukushima accident, at least from my perspective, and doing the show and the radio network and whatever, the Fukushima perspective and DARPA. Those are my two red button issues, and they've kind of spun out. Now, to everything else that I have researched and dug into, you know, the whole Fukushima thing really kind of got me into looking at damage that can be caused by particulates and what is in our air and what is in our water. And that really led to a lot of other things. And the whole DARPA piece of the puzzle, I remember when I first started reading about unmanned aerial vehicles and smart dust. And mind you, people still think that smart dust is a conspiracy theorist fantasy. But I hate to tell you, when I was in the 90s working in technology, and I was a lead technician back at that point for Hewlett-Packard, they had already been working on smart dust technology then. You know, their hope was to have these little mini sensors sprinkled all over the planet. It would be like a nervous system that they could access via some sort of wireless technology and get statistics, readings, whether it be heat, location, I don't know, substance, vibration. They wanted to have these probes, microscopic or beyond microscopic, nano-sized probes, all over the planet. Now, I remember postulating with some of my techie friends back in those days as to what that would actually mean for our future. And I remember I was always erring on the side of caution. I'm like, danger, danger. You know, this is invasive surveillance to the nth degree. Back in those days, though, never did I envision where DARPA's moonshot projects would take a turn. We are now at the point of being able to manipulate the brain, read the brain, scan the brain, implant and remove memories from the brain. A lot of that funding that had been acquired for DARPA through the DOD budget and who knows what else, black holes somewhere of money just funneling in. But that's really kind of moved into the science fiction realm of what was never physically possible becoming possible. They've sprinkled it out to our universities now and our research hospitals, as well as private industry. They've opened the doors now with that, what was it called? Something like the X. UX something. I don't know, where they opened up the contracting process now so you could bid on federal jobs and not have to necessarily be a federal contractor. There were some pretty strict rules that you had to fulfill to be able to even bid on federal jobs. But now DOD wants to innovate. They want to bring in technology to help further their capabilities and to help accelerate the process and the time to market. And they're like, oh, commercial innovation is so great. We might as well get it here in the DOD. So that has allowed DARPA to partner now with these institutions, commercial, educational, and otherwise healthcare, to bring these same technologies, all this brain research, being able to do brain implants, manipulate and control. We see all this crazy stuff where they are able to, like, what was the one we saw the other day about using optogenetically modified brain cells in a mouse and shine a laser on his head and be able to remote control him, I think they were doing, or changing his mind. No, they were shining a laser on his optogenetically modified brain cells to turn him into a killer. That's what it was. They found the spot in the brain where it made the jaws chomp and the claws claw, and they turned a mouse, a simple field mouse, into a predator. Now, I mean, I can't see any use for that in warfare. No. Turning little forest creatures against society. And we also saw, we talked yesterday again about that Insect Allies program. Not only are they trying to rule our brains and wildlife, but they are also working on insects as well as plants with this Insect Allies program, being able to manipulate, this time genetically speaking, viruses and put them into insects and then have those insects invade the crops. And as they're eating the crops, have that genetically modified virus they put into that insect, genetically modify the crops and flip some switches on or off for some changes. And of course, the protection that it might give our crops against future disease that might come from some sort of known or unknown, intentional or not, biowarfare against our food supply. That's how they're spinning this one. Let's manipulate these insects to turn them into armies that we can let go. Let's learn to manipulate these little field mice so we can turn them into killers. That's, who knows why we're experimenting with that? Wink. I mean, it's very, very frightening. So as we start seeing now, the whole Brain Initiative, all in conjunction with this, that Brain Initiative is not only helping them, quote unquote, find ways to cure mental disease, but it's also helping them build the synthetic, artificially intelligent brain that, and I mean, there's lots of them, but that can mimic human learning processes. We ended the show yesterday looking at IBM. Actually, we talked about IBM for 2 days now. We've talked about Dr. Watson quite a while now. But IBM has this big play, and it looks like they are turning up the heat on 2017, rolling out Dr. Watson, and I know he's only called Watson, but I like calling him Dr. Watson, into healthcare, working at 20 oncology hospitals. Now he is working on curing veterans. He's working with the VA not only on curing their cancers, but also in curing PTSD, trying to help diagnose and help come up with the diagnoses. Of course, a lot of the DARPA brain research in the very beginning was all done under the name and the guise of curing PTSD of soldiers coming back. We have good old Tommy Insel, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, who went over to Google's Verily Life Sciences division. And Tommy Insel is now going to be working on being able to diagnose mental disease with your voice patterns. We've talked about that. Scientific American did a huge article on that. I'm not only can they diagnose mental disorders, quote unquote disorders, with your voice, but they've also now can find that there are different diseases within your body, different organs within your body that also make telltale vocal signals in your voice patterns. And all they got to do is put an AI, like Watson or some of the many others, against it. Things that the human ear can't determine, the AI absolutely can. They also have their facial recognition software that's doing way more than recognizing anymore. It is able to look at your micro expressions. Again, something that they have trained psychiatrists, psychologists, and law enforcement and alphabet agencies to be able to do, but most people can't. But AI, with their googly robot eyes, i.e., a camera, can scan your face and see little twitches that might give you away that you're hiding information. We read last week about the new lie detector kiosks, and you go stand right up in front of them, start answering questions. And very potentially in the future, the AI interview you might have someday for a new job. Artificial intelligence can actually potentially eliminate HR directors as well as bias in hiring. You know, so they say. But as they're scanning your face and being able to determine, of course, whether or not you're lying. Of course, they can make these cameras colorblind. Maybe you're purple. Then you're not any color or nationality. But they can do other things like scan your face and determine, statistically speaking, with your facial features. Genetically, of course. Statistically, of course, in the database. Whether or not you're... progeny may have had, is that the right word for your progenitors? Yeah, I think so. People came before you, your ancestors, if they and your maybe ethnic background has an issue, statistically speaking, like I said, being criminals, or if you statistically are maybe smarter than the general population, and they can then profile you. Now, I got an email the other day from a listener out of the UK. I want to give you a shout out. It was definitely interesting. I made it through like 17 minutes before I had to run of this YouTube clip that Dan from sunny England, sunny southern England sent me. But the show itself was called Psychopaths. Season 1, Episode 1. You can search it on YouTube. I will put a link to this in the notes of the show. But he sent me this message and said, hey, he's been listening to the show. He makes people in the office listen to the show, too. So, hey, people in the office, if you're out there listening to the show, I'm sorry. But, hey, I hope you enjoy it. But, you know, he said you have to see talking about pre-programming. This is it's a Japanese anime. It's got English dubbing over it. So it's like, you know, a Johnny Quest type thing, you know, cartoonized, running around. But it actually was pretty good. It was set in the future. Like, how did he, I think he said it was like a Judge Dredd meets Minority Report. And I have to tell you, it most certainly is. I mean, a lot of these things that we've talked about and my crazy brain has kind of postulated on how they're going to be able to be tracking us. And potentially deeming us unfit, diagnosing us remotely, and making us criminals because we are defective, because we are not going to embrace the machine, because we are resistant consumers, is exactly what was going on in this episode. And it was frightening. It was absolutely frightening because, you know, even though this is a cartoonized version of our potential not too distant future, we, in this show, have been documenting the encroachment forward to this world, to this future reality. And they're doing this stuff in the lab. There are billions of dollars being poured into this technology. And we've established that all of these different industries are coming together at the same time to all focus their efforts on this 21st century complete invasion of life and humanity. They want to be able in the end to be able, like I said, to bag, tag, manipulate, monitor, and control everything. The best way to do that is to be able to control the brain. And, you know, it's not just zippity zapping that allows them to control the brain. They have spent many, many years, at least the last 100, and I know there's many, many, many hundreds of years before that where horrifying experiments were going on behind closed doors down very dark, long, bloody hallways. But they have put a lot of time and effort in the last 100 years learning how to manipulate us psychologically. And you could see it on a daily basis. It really, this mantra about the fake news and being able to twist reality sideways, 30 degrees left, 12 degrees upside down, utilizing mass media to then pump out the story on every channel to the general public so they have no choice if they want to be spoon-fed to believe what's being told them. And we talked about Edward Bernays many, 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 many times, Century of the Self, a must-see for anyone who has not. It will explain a lot about how we have been manipulated since the early days of the Industrial Revolution for this consume, buy, screw everybody else, it's all about me, narcissistic, instant gratification society that has now set the stage for them to be able to take us over, to completely enslave us without even a whimper. We have an entire society of couch potatoes who want to be spoon-fed the approved narrative out of the idiot box and satiate themselves with the seven deadly sins of the medieval times that are being fed to us like grapes. And we've become fat, dumb, and happy. They're giving us our soma. They're keeping us satiated. High fructose corn syrup and SSRIs. A little bit of reality TV and Kim Kardashian's butt. Doing some tweaks on the screen and nobody's complaining. We've had this changing of the guards. We've had executive orders ad nauseum over the last 8 years. And even before that, my mother pointed out to me the other day as my daughter was, I don't know, don't talk about politics when we go visiting there because there are two completely opposite camps. But my daughter was making some comments about Hillary Clinton to my mom and my sister, who, of course, were standing behind that whole side of the fence. My dad, my daughter, and I kind of were on the other side, maybe more to the middle. But my mother was pointing out how previous administrations had passed even more executive orders than Obama just did. But end result is, as these executive orders are being passed, we are losing more and more civil liberties. There is more and more invasive surveillance. There are more and more institutions that are being given rights to your information and are being given control, potentially, over our destinies. So we're looking now at all this mental health stuff. Like I said, there is a provision in the 21st Century Cures Act about the neurological surveillance. There's all kinds of money for mental health support. And they don't really detail how they're going to spend that money, but we have all kinds of research going on. We have IBM and Dr. Watson. Like I said, we have Tommy Insel working for Google, all focusing on mental health. So listen to this. Out of this 5 for 5, IBM's 5 big innovations that'll change our lives within the next 5 years. With AI, this is where we ended the show yesterday. Our words will be a window into our mental health. And we've talked about this a lot. Being able to diagnose, quote unquote, their definition of mental disease is they chuck the DSM out a window. So there are no more bullet pointed symptoms that they can point to and then draw a line across and find the drug they got to give you. Oh, no. We now all have mental disease on a spectrum, and they can determine that by putting your voice into a dashboard and letting the AI go bloop and determine what anomalies we might have upstairs. And then maybe even give good old Dr. Watson treatment recommendations to fix you. In 5 years, what we say and what we write will be used as indicators of our mental health and physical well-being. This is in 5 years, guys, and they're already working on this stuff. We have already seen a few research papers on the successes that they've been having. Patterns in our speech and writing analyzed by a new cognitive system will provide telltale signs of early stage developmental disorders, mental illness, and degenerative neurological diseases that can help doctors and patients better predict, monitor, and track these conditions. Now, let's back up 1 second. Were we or were we not just talking about this whole alter reality that they have been playing this psyop on us that really came full gear, full frontal into our faces as this election wound down, and they blamed Trump now being in the White House on fake news. Fake news, pushing out the narratives that apparently they say were not all true. Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation have never, ever done anything illegal. Nope, nope, nope. Those were all lies, I tell you. They're playing this psyop on the American public, this Google Truth Verified. Again, as a result of, this was as a result of the debates leading up to the election, but they've really beaten this mantra and confused the non-thinking general public as to what is true and what is not. And because alternative media was starting to get some attention out there, they had to discredit it. They had to cut it off at the knees. And now the next step of that is to be able to take people like me who do radio shows and put out a lot of speech on the internet that can be scanned, analyzed, which is frightening me, and tagged, as well as they can analyze patterns in what? Oh, writing. Well, yeah, all of our chats, chat room, all of our texts, all of our instant messages, but even more importantly, all of our alternative media stories that they will be able to scan and supposedly determine, ding, ding, whether or not your mental health and physical well-being should be of a concern. Ah, how frightening is that? So as they are looking for ways to shut down the opposition, the people who are standing up going, guys, why aren't people thinking for themselves? Why aren't people putting on intelligent, logical deduction caps, doing their own research, digging into the history of what has happened and what is happening now to determine the real truth? It's because they've been groomed not to. So they have stacked the deck 100% against us. And now their newest tool is this analysis of something that would be very difficult for us to hide, i.e. our voice, unless we have some new language that we come up with. And it couldn't even be like Pig Latin. It would have to be, like I've said before, the click language. Or maybe we have an eye blink language. You can't see me, but I'm blinking my eyes. You know, unless you do something like that, it's going to be very difficult to be able to screen our voices. So our patterns, the amounts of times between our words, our cadence in our inflections can be hidden. On the phone, talking to our family members as they're surveilling us over the camera that's open on our brand new Samsung surveillance TV or refrigerator or our cell phone. I mean, it's just so ubiquitous now, this ability to be spied upon. And they're coming up with tools that take things that we never thought could be used against us, like our voice cadence. And they're turning the tables and making it a quote-unquote diagnosis tool as they are rewriting the book on mental health. It's out a window, guys. This is going to allow them to determine on a case-by-case basis in a dashboard with artificial intelligence doing all the scanning real-time in some huge cloud-based data center, and then putting you on some sort of spectrum. Red, yellow, green, Jenny. And give a threat assessment. Tell whether or not you need to be brought in, voluntarily or not, for your own benefit for, quote unquote, this newfangled 21st century treatment that they are working on. Back to this IBM story, brain disorders, including developmental, psychiatric, and neurodegenerative diseases, represent an enormous disease burden. Of course, it's going to raise the cost of healthcare. Got to bring that down. In terms of human suffering and economic cost, for example, today, one in five adults in the U.S. experiences a mental health condition such as depression, bipolar disease, or schizophrenia. And roughly half of the individuals with severe psychiatric disorders never receive treatment. The global cost of mental health conditions is projected to surge to $6 trillion by 2030. So look at what a big, fat, ripe, juicy as a peach market the mental health projections are. $6 trillion of cost to be able to go after and find ways to, quote unquote, cure. It's got to be frightening. They even talked about developmental diseases of the brain. And we had read a story, I don't know, probably a couple of weeks ago, about them being able to diagnose children as young as the age of 3 as to whether or not they would be, quote unquote, problems when they got older. Their statistical analyses of not only behavior, because of course behavior monitoring is another whole component of this new surveillance grid they are dropping upon us, this internet of everything, but behavioral monitoring, statistically speaking, of course, can tell them whether or not you're going to be one of those children, let's say, at 3 years old, who's going to have a problem with maybe authority. That oppositional defiant disorder that's in the DSM. But then utilizing your voice patterns, like we are talking about now, they can determine too whether or not you might have some aggression or a little bit of twitchiness there, Johnny. Scan Johnny's face then with a camera. A few little pictures, click, click, click. Oh, I see you got some Polish in you there, Johnny. I see you got some revolutionary blood, I don't know, from that Russian Revolution, the Bolsheviks. Back from those days, we're going to bag and tag you, Johnny. You're going to go to special classes, and we are going to recondition you. Remember when we did that story about the new way they looked at brain plasticity? There's another big project as part of the Brain Initiative going on, looking at brain plasticity and how permanent or transitory our brain patterns that have been imprinted upon us since childhood are. And they have found that even though in the past they always thought that, hey, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, that is not true. They have discovered that brain plasticity in adults is pretty plastic. They can go in and they can, with treatment. When I remember when I was reading the stories on brain plasticity and reconditioning the brain, I started thinking of A Clockwork Orange, where I don't remember what his name was. The dude, the droogie, was in the movie theater with the eye clamps, clamping his eyes open, dropping the little drops of eye drops, forcing him to watch ultraviolence for hours on end to cure him of his propensity for violence. You know, that's called reconditioning. So when I read about things such as brain reconditioning and plasticity in adults, being able to diagnose us and, you know, reprogram, it's really got to make you worry. It's really got to make you question. And when you look at the history of human experimentation, all in the name of curing mental disease, and what has happened, not just in this country, but in others, of those who were deemed, quote unquote, mentally deficient. I think we should be concerned. I really do, especially since there are things now coming out of the federal government with large dollar value. This whole mental health and 21st century cures, 21st century medicine, precision medicine, individualized healthcare, being able to have a doctor smartphone 24/7 by your side. Your best friend, your AI trusted advisor that you tell all your secrets to, and in the future, your augmented connection to your virtual assistant with the little nanobodies embedded in your neocortex will be with you wherever and whenever you are. Guys, there will not be individualism or free thoughts or rebellious thoughts. It will be sin, quote unquote, sin in thoughts, word, and deed. How interesting is that? Back to IBM's story. In 5 years, cognitive computers will analyze a patient's speech or written words to look for telltale indicators found in language, including the meaning, the syntax, and the intonation. So we better all talk like this so we cannot give away anything about how we are feeling. I mean, right? This is what it's going to come down to. I would guarantee you, if they ran some of my shows through Dr. Watson, trying to determine my mental health, guys, I think I'm pretty damn stable. Sometimes I get a little tweaky over this type of stuff. I get a little overexcited, but it's only because I care. But I would be afraid as to what Dr. Watson would be spitting out about me if they listened to the show. You know, people who are passionate, people who have ups and downs, the creative types, the ones who always lived a little bit outside of the fringe and questioned the status quo, are the ones of us who are going to be targeted as problem people. We're the ones that try to buck the system. We're the ones that take a look at social injustices and try to raise awareness. The humanitarians, the artists, the creatives, the people who care, the ones who don't fall for the societal brainwashing that they're putting out there because we ask questions. Those are the people who are going to show up on these dashboards as having quote unquote mental illness. Mark my words. Well, combining these results of patient speech and written words, they could take these measurements and add those to measurements from wearables, which I will predict with the new 21st century healthcare that is being rolled out, that wearables will be a requirement if you hope to get healthcare. You know they will be. And they can then combine that with imaging systems such as MRIs and EEGs. Run that through with Dr. Watson. So remember, he's learning to read those scans and paint a more complete picture of an individual's health for professionals to better identify, understand, and treat your underlying disease. Be it Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, Huntington's, PTSD, or even neurodevelopmental conditions such as autism, ADHD, and I'm sure many others. What were once invisible signs will become clear signs of a patient's likelihood of entering a certain mental state or telltale sign as to how well their treatment plan is working. You're not taking your medication, Johnny. Complementing their regular clinical visits with daily assessments from the comfort of their own homes. And I'm going to add, as we are invasively surveilling you. This is an IBM document, guys. This is a 5 for 5 document. The 5 areas where we see technology going off the hook in the next 5 years. At IBM, scientists are using transcripts and audio inputs from psychiatric interviews coupled with machine learning techniques to find patterns in speech that will help clinicians accurately predict and monitor our psychosis, schizophrenia, mania, and depression. And today, horrifyingly enough, it only takes about 300 words to help clinicians predict the probability of psychosis. 300 words. And if you remember, we also talked about a piece of software that has been released by Adobe that was like a Photoshop for voice that allows them to take, if I am not mistaken, 20 minutes of your voice, run it through this software so we could get all your cadence and ambiance, nuances, syntax, and then build a library of your, I guess you'd call it your algorithm, maybe. Build an algorithm to be able to replicate the patterns it identifies. And the software could then allow somebody to take your voice, take a snippet of your voice, edit that snippet, and insert words that you didn't even say into that audio. And then output that new piece of audio as if it were the original. So, you know, we've talked about future things they could do. They are able to replicate your face. We've talked about that face-to-face software where you could have someone behind a camera talking, and then being output would be your motions, your arms flapping, your mouth moving, your eyebrows going up and down, but you can skin the output with somebody else's face. And in the examples that we saw in the video that there was out there illustrating the tool, they had Putin, they had Bush, and once they then could replicate the voice and insert the voice on top of the replicated face, how will we ever know what is true and what is not? They could approach your family members and say, oh, Johnny is having a psychotic episode. Look, we filmed him. He was on the street. Look, here he is babbling to himself. And they have some fake recording of Johnny, but it's not really Johnny. It's someone else playing the puppeteer, the electronic puppeteer behind it, with their Adobe Photoshop for voice, cutting in Johnny babbling. But it sounds just like Johnny. It's just like the way Johnny talks. It's got to be Johnny. It looks like Johnny. It sounds like Johnny. Listen to what Johnny is saying. To get that family to agree with the quote-unquote healthcare assessment that Johnny may have a psychiatric disorder that he needs to be treated for. Oh, well, ink right here, family. Here, commit Johnny. You know, they were talking about, I mentioned before, involuntary commitment is very tough. In a lot of states, you need to actually have the patient commit themselves, and that's difficult, especially if someone is having, like, substance abuse problems or whatever, and they're, like, so way out in left field. You know, unless you can somehow prove that they are a danger to themselves or others to get some sort of 24-hour hold, nothing's going to happen. You know, we discussed Obama laxing, is that a word? As part of Sandy Hook and those executive actions that he cut, he had promised to slacken HIPAA laws, being able to keep your mental health records private. And now they do have access when it comes to gun ownership. And I'm not saying, like I said originally, I don't know if that is a bad idea. Who wants to be handing someone who just got out of some sort of mental facility for major depression or whatever their firearm back? I don't think that's such a smart thing. But on the other hand, the slippery slope of opening our private medical records and giving the system, the federal system, the background check, the alphabet agencies access to that information could put us in a very precarious position. It could give them rights to do things like this, to scan everything, to make a profile. And I don't even think, even if they didn't have rights, I would almost bet you it's being done regardless of that, all in the name of safety. But it gets even worse, guys, because it is not just IBM chomping at the bit how the next 5 years going to be one of the big money makers, one of the big innovations in healthcare. Oh no, Google with Tommy Incel is going all balls out as well. Google wants to monitor your mental health, and you should welcome it into your mind. The use of technology to treat and track mental illness is deeply worrying, but, oh, sadly necessary, says this story. Next week, and this is from October 2015, this is right before Tommy Incel bailed as the head of the National Institute of Mental Health for Google's Verily division. Next week, so that was at the very end of October, beginning in November 2015, Tommy Incel left his post as the head of the National Institute of Mental Health, a job that made America's top mental doctor. And Dr. Incel is a neuroscientist and a psychiatrist and a leading authority on both medicine and public policy needed to deal with the problems of the mind. He is 64, but don't worry, Tommy's not retiring. He is going to work for Google. And, you know, I brought up then, add to that DARPA's connections to Google, DARPA Dan, Regina Duggan, all the crossover that they've had going on. And then add to that as well, Kurzweil, good old Kurzweil, head of engineering, and all of his history studying natural language processing. Oh, conveniently enough, natural language processing, how they're going to start diagnosing mental illness. Oh, my goodness. More precisely, Tommy Incel is going to work for Google Life Sciences, one of the more exotic provinces of the online empire. He is going to investigate how technology can help diagnose and treat mental health conditions. And Google doesn't want to just read your mind. They want to fix it, too. Ding, ding, a ling, a ling, a ling. That is where we should be afraid. You know, and then add to that, Kurzweil talking about nanobots connecting your brain 24/7, being augmented to the cloud, getting them in your blood, too, to every little nanorobot doctors to cure you and monitor. Guys, this is beyond dystopian nightmare. And guess what? Google is not alone. Apple, IBM, which we've already established, as well as Intel, are also among the technology companies exploring the same field, i.e. mental health. IBM this year, and this was 2015, carried out research with Columbia University that suggested computer analysis of speech patterns can more accurately predict the onset of psychosis than conventional tests involving blood samples or brain scans. Other researchers theorize that a person's internet search history, ding ding, or shopping habits. Now, I mean, we've known about those forever, and we know none of that is private. Careful what you search for, Johnny. They'll be sending the patrols. But those things can identify the very first signs of your mental illness. So, you know, we're worrying about getting on a DHS list by our internet searches. How about, or shopping habits, how about worrying about getting on a mental illness list? Because I never even thought of that. Computers can also now tell when something is about to go terribly wrong in somebody's mind. And we covered some of those apps that they have that they're already using to surveil people who are in the system. They've already been diagnosed chemically or whatever. They're in the system and they are medicated. They are just now doing maintenance through smart applications. But in the future, we are talking about using algorithms and artificial intelligence to be able to scan people, voice, face patterns, actions, your, that's the word I'm looking for. We read a story one time about how our habits, daily habits, are pretty ingrained. And when you deviate from those daily habits, it means that something is going on. And when it's gone on then for a few days, maybe it's not just a fluke. Maybe you've entered the realms of depression. Johnny's not on Facebook for the last 3 days. Oh no, maybe Johnny's crying. And he's sad. They're going to be able to get us from all these different ways. In the 21st Century Cures Act, where it talked about neurological surveillance, one of the interesting things is that they talked about and mentioned quite a few times that it would be non-invasive. Yeah, like, i.e. no brain implants yet. Those will only be reserved for our special cases. Wink. But non-invasive surveillance means all these other tools. Your voice, your Facebook, your internet searches are all going to be used to quote-unquote diagnose us. The development of being able to determine when something is going very wrong in somebody's mind with non-invasive surveillance is striking enough in and of itself, but the way in which researchers like Dr. Insel want to use this new technological power raises even more questions. Ding, 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 ding. Wearable technology has been a hot topic in medical innovation for several years now, and a growing number of people, those who have no clue, choose to track their own physical conditions using Fitbits, ding ding, jawbones, and other activity trackers, tiny wearable devices that monitor your movements, your pulse rate, your sleep patterns, and more. And we have gone into this way in depth. Wearable computing is the next ball on the chain. There are also tiny wearables and activity trackers that can monitor your movements, your pulse rates, your sleep patterns. And once the preserve of obsessive fitness fanatics, self-monitoring has now the scope to transform healthcare. Ding, ding. Personalized medicine. It's all about you. You're the center of the universe. Put on your Fitbit so your Dr. Watson can watch you. And that's what it's going to be. People want to be healthy. They want to keep their healthcare costs down. Because if you don't wear one, it's going to cost you double. And guess what? You could drop dead at any moment in time. We want to be able to give you the ability to watch 24/7 if there is even a hint of anything going wrong, so we can fix you and you might potentially be able to live to a very ripe old age of 152. If you get these little nanobodies. The ever-increasing number of people with chronic conditions can track and electronically report their systems, reducing the number of routine and expensive consultations they need with medical staff and ensuring a quick response that to changes that do require direct professional attention. Here come the white coats. Taking Johnny in. Self-monitoring will also surely play a bigger role in preventative public health. Ding, ding, ding. I'm telling you, it's going to be mandatory. Wearing a pedometer that counts the number of steps you take a day has been shown to spur people to walk more. And what would happen to your consumption of alcohol or sugar if a device strapped to your wrist involuntarily displays a continuous count of your calorie and unit intake for the week? Dr. Insel is part of a school of thought that suggests this technology is even better suited to mental health. The symptoms of depression, for instance, are inconsistent and ebbing and rising and flowing without obvious patterns, but a short consultation with a doctor once every few weeks is thus a poor means of diagnostics. But wearing monitoring technology allows for continuous watching, and a small portable device might monitor the tone of your voice, speech patterns, physical movements, picking up early signs of trouble. A device such as a mobile phone. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. So we now live in a world where your cell phone might be able to help observe and assess your mental health. And if you don't find that prospect disturbing, you are either fantastically trusting of companies and governments, or you haven't quite thought about it enough. All right, guys, we are going to pick up there tomorrow. Make sure you have an awesome Tuesday, tons of live radio, and I will catch up with you on Wednesday.